Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who might stop by to ask for a cup of slab. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
Yeah, baby, we'll do that. Give me a cup of slab and a cup of sugar while I'm there.
Give me that. Give it to me.
Let's see. It's show 432 for April 23rd, 2018. And guess what, guys? It's Nicole's birthday.
Happy birthday.
I'm really bad. Really bad with dates.
Have a cup of slab.
Have a cup of slab on us.
Exactly what she always wanted.
She was asking me for that. In fact, I think cup of slab is on her Amazon wish list.
Cup of slab.
Oh! Just a couple seconds too late. All right, so it is Nicole's birthday. It's a very important thing. And I'll tell you, the reason I know her birthday... The reason I know her birthday is because since I was a kid collecting baseball cards, I memorized Don Mattingly's jersey number was 23. And then when I met Nicole and she said her birthday was April 23rd, my birthday's in April, so it was easy to remember the month. And the day was easy because I was like, oh, that's Don Mattingly's number. So there's that. And that, nobody really cares about that. I have no idea why I even said that.
I don't know who that is.
You were too young. I don't even think you were paying attention to baseball in like 1985. What were you doing in 1985?
86. I was still some kind of sperm or egg.
You were drinking milk from your mom at that age.
I was not. Even, not yet.
Oh my God, really?
Ow. Yeah.
You're
I was born in 87.
You're post Back to the Future?
Yeah, that's 85, right? Yeah.
Oh, God.
Is that how we judge timelines now?
Generally, that's how
pre and post Back to the Future.
Yeah. Yeah, he's post Back to the Future 1. That's terrible. Oh, my goodness.
I told you. You know I'm a millennial. I don't understand.
I know. I try to forget.
Like, it surprises you every time.
It keeps haunting me. Try to forget about it.
Add a greater sense of value to Zemeckis and the global world influence there. That's incredible.
Yeah. Okay, so on today's show, we're talking about...
This still the intro?
Just waiting for it to eventually hit something valuable. Okay, on today's show, we're going to talk about this Latin word, Ozaroa reticulata, unnecessary expensive tools, cross-grain workbench, and making a table lighter. And if there are dogs screaming in the background...
I was going to say, what is that noise?
Should I just persist or should I get them out of the office? That's the question.
Well, now I know what it is. It's less bad. I wasn't really totally sure.
When the two of them
hearing.
Wrestle, Millie's like, oh, it's really weird. So you might hear it in the background. All right. So really quick, today's show is sponsored by our friends over at Brusso Hardware. Are you looking for inspiration for your next project? Brusso Hardware features amazing customer submitted projects in their Photo Extra newsletter. It's updated every week. It showcases the dedication and craftsmanship of your fellow woodworkers. What kind of projects, you ask? Is that what you just asked, Matt?
What kind of projects would you say were in there?
I could have sworn I heard you ask that. How about keepsake boxes, humidors, furniture, and more? They also share their thoughts behind the process of building those projects. So if you want a sweet dose of inspiration delivered straight to your inbox, then sign up by visiting brusso.com/photoextra. And I am subscribed to the Photo Extra, and I receive my weekly dose of inspiration every week because it's weekly. Fantastic. Wow. Yeah.
That was deep.
Yeah. And Shannon just stocked up on their big sale that they had not too long ago. He's got tons. He's got knife hinges for days over there.
I'm like Scrooge McDuck, swimming in knife hinges.
Yeah, throwing them up in the air. He's like, everybody's jealous of Shannon over there with his sweet, sweet knife hinges. Okie doke. So yeah, that's Brusso.com and Brusso.com/photo extra. You can get more information on that stuff.
Man, you ever take it off sweet jumps?
Okay. Let's actually kick things off with a couple of voicemails here. First one.
Nah, this is good. Let's just keep doing this.
Yeah, I like this. No, let's go to voicemails. This one is from, I'm going to call him Kevin Dice Clay.
Oh, boy.
Hey, if it ain't the gorilla, the giggler, and the goomba. Triple G in the house. What's happening, guys? All right. Now that I got that idiocy out of the way, let's go to my question. Big fan of Seal Coat and big fan of Tight Bond Liquid Hide Glow. So my question is there enough benefit from the stuff that you have to mix yourself, talking about shellac flakes and the hide glue that you gotta boil, making a pot like a witch? Is there enough benefit with those things that outweigh the tremendous convenience of just being able to use the pre-made stuff? Am I missing out on something by not using these things? Love to hear your opinions. Probably not Mark's, because I really don't picture him, you know, mixing up hide glue. Do you even have a glue pot, bro? I mean, come on. All right. Later, boys.
All I picture is Shannon in a witch's hat, like huddled around a cauldron.
Sweet hide glue.
I just love the new form of woodworking shaving. Do you even have a glue pot?
A glue pot? Yeah, I don't. I don't. All right, Kevin, is that okay with you?
That's great.
So, what do you guys think? We're mixing stuff versus pre-made and shellac and hide glue are the primary things in question.
Well, I can tell you from a hide glue perspective, unless you're doing like veneer. I don't really know. I mean, for normal projects and joinery and things like that, liquid hide glue works just fine. I do prefer old brown over Tight Bond. I like the lower viscosity of old brown glue. But even then, I mean, I've got a bottle of Tight Bond on my shelf, and if my hand happens to hit that first, that's what I'm using.
Right.
When you're doing veneer, the pre-mixed and heated stuff, it tacks up a lot faster, a lot easier. It just makes the whole process a lot easier than the stuff because of the urea that's put in the glue to keep it liquid, whatever it is, whatever that magic is that's thrown in there, the pixie dust.
Are you peeing in your glue?
Urina?
Yes. Yes, Matt. I pee in my
glue. Is that part of your witch's brew?
Pee in the glue pot.
That's the name of this show.
There it is. I'm going to write it down. Pee in the glue pot. Okay. So shellac. Yeah,
from a glue perspective, I think only on a very specific reason when it comes to, and even then, like hammer veneering stuff. And veneering when you've got like multiple parts where you kind of need them to be in the right place. Like it's not like you're just using one sheet of glue or veneer over a substrate and you're just going to trim it to size later. Like if you're doing a fan marquetry or something like that, and you want it to stay in place, the stuff you mixed up tacks up a lot faster.
Okay. You know what, for shellac, I think you can totally get away with using the canned stuff, but you know, these things have shelf lives. The cool thing about shellac, if you do mix your own, I'm not even going to say that there's a major quality difference. I think if you're into French polishing, you're probably going to notice a difference because you are doing a lot more with the material than simply just laying on coats. So that's going to be a big deal. But if you're not necessarily doing that, mixing your own, you actually have the ability to mix a certain amount. So the cool thing is you have the dry flakes and you only mix what you need. You know, you don't have to worry about like the shelf life and the stuff going bad. So I think you get more longevity out of a bag of flakes or, you know, powder or whatever it is, to be able to make your own shellac as needed. And if it is a higher quality, you've got that bonus too. So for me, I don't use shellac all that often. I'd rather just have a bag of flakes that I could go to whenever I need it rather than go out and buy a can, which I'll probably only use half of, and then it'll sit there and be bad by the time I need to use it again. For shellac, that's how I would handle it. But yeah, I don't have a glue pot, so I don't worry about high glue. Shut up, Kevin. All right. You have any other stuff to add to that, Matt?
I'm kind of like in the same pot as you.
In the same glue pot as me? Oh!
All
right.
Kevin, I can throw in, if you like using the liquid stuff and you like using shellac, check out Royal Lac over at shellacfinishes.com. I love that stuff. And it definitely, it's a higher quality finish. It's got greater quality or clarity to it. But again, Mark's right in the fact that unless you're doing French polishing, you may not notice it as much. But to me, there's something about that finish that feels so much better and looks better than like the Zinsser stuff. Mm-hmm. Keeping in mind, I have a can of Zinsser Seal Coat in my cabinet next to the Royal Lac. But yeah, certainly there is a price difference. Royal Lac over Seal Coat.
Sure. All right. We have one here from Aaron.
Hey, Mark, Shannon, and Matt, aka the cute one, the smart one, and the funny one.
Hold up.
I just started getting serious.
Hold up. Who's who?
I think we all have those qualities.
Do we take him in the order he provided? Because he did give our names first and then said AKA. So let me back this up. Okay.
Hey, Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
So Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
AKA the cute one.
I'm the cute one?
Yeah. And the funny one.
Okay, so wow. Then I'm the cute one, Shannon's the smart one, and Matt's the funny one.
Ooh.
Maybe. I want to be the funny one.
I don't know how cute you are.
I don't care about being cute. I'm married. I'm 40 years old. What do I give a crap?
The ship sailed for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm at sea at this point. I just, you know, I want to be the funny guy. But yeah, I think definitely the smart one is Shannon. There's no doubt about that. The thing is, we're all pretty smart. Shannon just likes to let everyone know that he's smart. that's the difference.
I want to be the cute one. I never get to be the cute one.
Okay, I'll shut up now and let Aaron finish his question.
I just started getting serious about woodworking, and I have a basic question. I have a 5-year-old daughter who wants to be a radiologist and a 2.5-year-old son who we're pretty sure will be an engineer. How do I decide whose college fund I'm going to use to buy all the tools and lumber? Seriously, though, I want to build my daughter a Purple Heart chest of drawers, and I plan on modifying the guild project by replacing the walnut with Purple Heart. Which species will contrast the Purple Heart best on the sides and drawer fronts, and how do I keep the Purple Heart purple? Love the show, guys. Aaron in Littleton, Colorado.
Two things. He's in Littleton. So am I. Aaron, we should be buds. Let's hang out. The second thing, I'm going to let Shannon answer this question since I know how much he loves contrasting species and things like that.
Yeah, that's never going away.
So what would you put with Purple Heart, Shannon? Maple, right?
Yeah. remember a couple shows ago when we did Things We Hate?
Yeah.
Purple Heart. Why do you want to keep it purple? It looks better when it goes to that kind of brownish red, I think.
Yeah.
I think what you need to think about is complement rather than contrast in this particular instance. I think cherry works pretty well with Purple Heart. Mm-hmm. I think if you keep it purple, like a deeper, like reddish brown wood can work really well as well. Problem is, have you guys had any success in keeping it like that really bright, vibrant purple? I don't think there's a whole lot you can do. Eventually, going to turn red brown.
Right.
I'm sitting next to a Purple Heart table, and it is red, like red.
Yeah.
Not brown, red.
Yeah, it's kind of inevitable that it's going to make that change. It will generally not stay that vibrant purple color that it starts.
If you want to keep it that way, resurface though. It every couple of years. Oh.
You know? That sounds fun.
Yeah,
that's it. With Purple Heart and apply more finish.
Because it's not even a sunlight issue. It's an oxidization issue. So even if it's sitting like in the dark, it will do it slower, no question, but it's still going to change into that very reddish red color in Matt's case. It's red.
Right.
It's red.
So I think that's important to look at as far as what species you use to complement it. Because like I said, you know, you could do, you know, maybe a Bubinga would look kind of cool while it's purple, but then it's just going to look all Bubinga when it's done.
Yeah. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, Aaron, you know, we're friends. We're from the same town. I feel like we're close enough that I could be honest with you here. I would advise against that, using Purple Heart in this context. There, and this is something that I'm guilty of. I think everybody, once you get into the world of exotics, you start to realize things like Paduk exist and things like, I'm not going to throw Bubinga under the bus because I love Bubinga, but like Purple Heart. And I think
Heart.
Yeah, that too. And I think we have a tendency to say, yes, let's use these. But 5 years from now, you're going to look at that thing and you're going to go, why did I use that much Purple Heart in that project?
5 years from now, that box you made out of Purple Heart, Yellow Heart, and Lacewood,
yeah,
it's in the shop holding rubber bands to use as clamps.
Yes.
So I hear.
Right? I mean, it's to be completely honest with you, there's a point where some of these really bright, vivid species just don't work great on a larger scale like that. And he's right for toning it down a little bit by saying, well, I don't want to use it for the panels, for the legs, for the top. I'm just going to, you know, do this two-tone thing following the, I guess I used walnut and cherry as my two. It's going to be really hard to find a complementary wood that's going to look good in 5 years. And part of the problem is just Purple Heart is Purple Heart. And it's with Purple Heart, it's a less is more proposition. And I think using it as a primary furniture element is a little bit risky. You might regret it in the future.
What if you dyed it? I know people do that with walnut to keep it from changing. Can you dye Purple Heart to keep it purple-ish?
Yeah, but that's still the problem. It's still purple.
I know that, but it's for a small girl.
As opposed to a large one.
You know,
whose color preferences would be very different. Sorry.
Yeah, and when she's 15, she's gonna paint it anyway.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You bring up a good point. You know, a little kid or someone who just likes purple might really really like this idea of this purple thing. Okay, I see where you're going.
I don't know. I'm just more curious, like if that even would prevent the shift, because the underlying wood is shifting so far from purple,
mm-hmm,
right?
That like, would the dye even have an effect? It's more like a hypothetical, rhetorical kind of question.
Purple Heart doesn't have like a really pronounced grain to it. So, I mean, all dye is just pigment, right? And, you know, so is paint. So,
well, no, dye is dye and pigment is pigment, but go on.
Dye is really, really small pigment. It's all just dirt. It's just dirt. Just dirt in a solution, you know?
Yeah. I guess maybe it might help. I mean, but with a color like purple, it's a little trickier to pull that off.
I've just never heard of anybody doing it. That's why I bring it up.
I guess you could, but then you get the people who are like, well, if you want a purple, then just use a different wood and put that same, you know, material on there to make it purple. Because you're, you know, I don't know. It's a weird question.
That's valid as well, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Use ebony and turn it purple.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes. Perfect.
No one ever talks about that, and they should. People should be doing that.
He's talking about turning other things into ebony.
Yeah. What a waste. All right, let's get into our emails here. Shannon, you're up.
This is from Leonid. He says, I have a question for the two with wood everywhere.
That would not be me. I could tell you that much.
My wife bought me a pen for our 5th anniversary made out of Olipod burl. It's absolutely amazing, but I can't find any information on it. And how do I get some of it? I'd love to have a set of saw handles made from it when I get back from deployment. Thanks for all you do, guys. I'll say thank you for your service. I'm assuming if he's on deployment, unless he's like deployed delivering phone books or something.
Maybe.
Do they deploy anybody else unless you're in the military?
My wife deploys me to the grocery store once in a while.
Well, Lena, thanks for your service. No matter what you're being deployed to do, we appreciate it. Olipod is Ozoroa reticulata, and I did not know that off the top of my head. I had to look that up.
Yeah, right.
Which is the answer to the question, Leonid. I actually looked up Olipod burl on Google, and what you'll find is the specialty dealers, the guys that do like wood turning blocks and things like that. they tend to have a fair amount of it. Companies that specialize in live edge slabs and such, they'll find this. If you look a little bit deeper into the species itself, it's not really like a big tree with like a large bowl that you can cut a bunch of lumber into. It's kind of a weird shaped thing. So you're never really going to get large boards out of it. Good news is you were looking for saw handles. So you ought to be able to have some success just Googling Olipod burl. I was able to find 4 or 5 dealers that had online stores that I was able to buy and pick by the board from there. So I would say once you get back, pull out the Google machine. It's common enough as far as I'm seeing that you should be able to find it. If you can't find it, look for African resin wood or just type in Ozorora reticulata because I'm sure you know how to spell that.
Mm-hmm. Everyone does.
In the show notes.
Very good.
All right, this is from Steve. It says, hey guys, like three of you. And wow, that is, I'm back to my old
three
self again.
Three words into it.
Into the baton over to Matt.
Like the three of you and most of your listeners, I work alone in my shop. When making something big, let's say a tabletop, it can be tricky to move it around the shop. And my partner in life isn't. And while my partner in life and everything isn't always available to help lift, do you have any tips or tricks for handling large, heavier, awkward pieces in the shop by yourself? I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say for this, because for me, it has to do a lot with like overconfidence and stupidity. I think it's probably where a lot of this ends up going.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I guess, kind of understanding yourself and your shop environment and the shop itself. If you're kind of moving things around, if you're actually able to move things around, you probably have a decent sized shop. So having something on wheels or a cart or something to move things around on that, it's probably going to help you a lot. Like, if you're building a chest of drawers or something, having the case on a set of furniture dollies can definitely help kind of move things around if that's kind of what you're after. For me, I don't have that luxury. So like when I'm building something that's planted in one spot, unless I need to get something like on and off the assembly table, which is what I did with the uppercase of the high boy repeatedly. And I'll tell you what, as that thing got heavier, I was like, this is dumb. I'm going to end up dropping this or something's going to happen to me. Because
mm-hmm.
it was ridiculous. So unfortunately, a lot of times like, okay, well, I got to like set up my schedule around working so that when Lindsay's here, she can help me. And not that she actually enjoys doing that. It's like her least favorite thing to do. Huh. She hates picking things up and moving them.
Nicole and they have that in common. Nicole hates that.
They would get along pretty well then.
It's all pissy when I ask her to come in the shop and do something.
it's the other thing too, is like, if I'm going to ask her to come help with something, it's guaranteed fight. It's like, so I do everything in my power to move it by myself.
Right. Exactly.
If I don't have to go down that road, I can be happier and it's faster. Mm-hmm. It's just nice. But another example was the farmhouse table. I had to flip that tabletop over so many times. So having a good strategy for flipping it over definitely helps. So for me on that tabletop, I would try and stand it up on end. So I would put my hands underneath it, lift it up vertically, and kind of hold it vertical as I walked around the other side of the sawhorses and then kind of let it down from the other side. So having some kind of strategy behind the operation you're doing can definitely help. And then I guess a little bit of young stupidity in there also would probably be beneficial.
I think if you think in terms of only dealing with part of the weight at a time, you know, so if you're thinking about trying to lift something and you think about lifting the entire thing and it's really heavy, you're going to be in trouble. But for instance, something as simple as just moving the Rubo around is a little bit tricky, right? If you wanted to move that thing. But what makes it really easy, get a furniture dolly, take one end. You could lift up one side easily enough, get the dolly underneath.
Easily enough. Uh-huh. I did that like 2 weeks ago. Not easily enough.
Well, you can't lift up one side of your bench easily. You little weakling.
I wouldn't say easily. I mean, I can do it. I wouldn't say it's easily.
Okay. For normal size people, it's an easy thing to do. And all you need to do is lift up one side.
You know, my bench is like 4 times my body weight, right?
Maybe. You should have used pine.
That's my mistake.
So, so then you lift one end up, get the dolly under there, then you can go to the other end and lift that side up, and now part of the weight is being, you know, bared by the borne by the dolly. So you can kind of steer it and move it around that way. So I've moved a lot of really heavy things by trying to take half of the weight or part of the weight and putting it on something mobile and then lifting the other side and kind of pushing it around. It's slow going, but you can do it pretty safely.
That's kind of emulating what having a second person there is. Yeah, exactly. Like the dolly becomes the second person carrying that side of the load.
Right. Except you don't have to go, no, to the left. No, your left. No, to right. No, put your... No.
I'm going to drop it. It hurts. My hands. Right. You didn't give me gloves.
You need a break?
My hands.
Okay, we'll take a break.
I recommend you don't call them Dolly either.
Yeah, especially if it's your neighbor named Jim. He doesn't appreciate that. Okay, so I think I got the next one here. Jason says, I'm a newer woodworker, and I'm still trying to acquire tools. I'm also on a budget. I know that for some tools, higher price means much better quality, like Lee Nielsen versus a Stanley plane from Home Depot, so it's worth the expense. For others, you're paying for nicer materials and maybe longevity, but the performance is the same for a cheaper tool. What are some tools, especially smaller tools like marking gauges, knives, squares, etc., where it makes sense to spend the money? Do I really spend $115 on a Starrett marking gauge? Or will a $15 one from Woodcraft work as well? I find this really interesting. I am incredibly guilty of buying, overbuying, let's call it that, overbuying in this category of marking gauges and small tools and things. Because a lot of times in the like super premium market, that's where a lot of these things get really fun. And if you look at like a really well done marking knife or like Dima's little tiny stubby hammers, right? Like those all of a sudden in the guild group on Facebook, it for like a week straight, post after post after post were these little brass hammers. And I'm like, guys, we got it. You know, you like your little brass hammers. It's fun.
He keeps coming over to cut brass stock on my bandsaw.
Yeah. I mean, and it's cool. And these things are beautiful, but it's that sort of smaller tool. Like, do you need that? Absolutely not. You could just use any hammer or any mallet to get the job done. But I think you get to a point with the woodworking stuff where even if it's, you know, hobby, obviously, it's a lot of people are buying with, you know, extra income so they could throw a little more at it to get something that they find more pleasant to work with. But even as a pro, sometimes it's like, well, I'm going to invest, you know, a few more bucks in this thing. Maybe it'll last a little bit longer, but I use it every day. I may as well enjoy looking at it and enjoy holding it. Maybe it's more ergonomic. You know, so I myself am guilty of this. So can you guys think of any specifics here? I don't know. I'm trying to think what would be a specific thing that it is necessary to get that more expensive, you know, elite version of something. Anything come to mind?
It's actually kind of hard.
Isn't it though? I mean, I was trying to think of it. I wanted to pass it off to you guys because I couldn't think of something where that let's say the square is a good example. If you have a reliable like engineer square and you go to Woodcraft or Home Depot, check the squares that are there. Find the one that's actually square because most of them probably won't be. Find the one that actually is square, and now you've got a serviceable square. Hopefully it'll stay that way, but you know, at least for the time being, you've got one that's starting off square. And once it is square, it's going to do just as well as any other one, no matter how much you spend on it. You know, it just needs to be square and you need to be able to mark against it and measure with it.
Yep.
So, I mean, in that category, it's really
maybe
tough.
A bevel gauge, just because they tend to slip a lot and the nicer ones don't.
Yeah.
You can drop them on the concrete and they don't shift.
That's a good one. Yeah.
But I've also got a vintage Stanley that's the same way. But I guess one would call that premium because it wasn't cheap.
Yeah.
So, man, I'm just looking at my tool cabinet and I'm the same way as you, Mark. I've got some, frankly, a lot of my marking tools were bought for bling purposes.
Right. Well, think about like a cutting gauge. Cutting gauges and marking gauges. All right. These are things that you could do with a couple of sticks and a pencil or... You know, you could get the cheapest one out there as long as it locks, kind of maybe on the same topic as the bevel gauge. As long as it holds its setting, it doesn't really matter. You know, everything else is just gravy.
Right.
So this is a challenging question. Maybe this is one to throw out to folks listening. Are there any of these that you think that super premium is really buying you, you know, something more than just a diminishing return?
It's all like the user experience, I think. You know, if you're getting the enjoyment out of using a tool that actually, like, with the square example, like, the first time I got the stair in my hand, I'm like, well, there goes my desire to use any other square because this thing slides so nicely.
Yeah.
You can pull the blade out super easily and put it back even easier. And you can, it just, everything is, the fit and finish is like perfect.
Yeah.
And it just operates so nicely and slides so nicely. There's no way I'm going to be using a, you know, home center square anymore, adjustable square, because it just doesn't feel the same.
And it locks in without, you know, scraping your fingers on the knurled knob. Like you can tighten it to the amount that it needs to be tightened without like really cranking down on it.
Yeah, I'm not going to try and bust off the locking mechanism trying to tighten it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happens if you drop it? Asking for a friend.
I've only dropped the blade. So I got this little nub on one side I got to file off. Okay. Otherwise, I can't insert it into the holder anymore.
I have dropped my Lee Valley, like small pocket square, little double square dealie. I've dropped that thing like 5 times. And in 2 of those 5 times, it's broken. So that's my bad.
Well, was it still square afterwards?
Well, how would I know? It was broken. But yeah, once
well,
I got
other
it.
Times. Once I got it. 2 times.
Yeah, broke, yeah. Right? It was still square. But once I got the little replacement doohickey thing, the little hook thingy dealy, it was perfectly fine. So I got butterfingers. What can I say?
They're delicious.
Delicious butter. How would you know? That's disgusting, Matt.
You know, I mean, licking your fingers, my fingers. You're not watching, apparently.
Are you going to eat that?
It's almost a fascinating social experiment just to see what happens when you two are just left. Just see what happens.
Just left to talk to each other.
It's bad.
Yeah, we should probably record.
Really,
we should probably
this
just
is when I shift into observational mode. I feel like I should have a pad out taking notes.
He's like, he's watching two monkeys in a cage smelling each other's butts.
Seriously. You got two people that have no shame and have very immature senses of humor. Yeah, I think it's a disaster waiting to happen.
I stick my finger in Matt's butt and then I smell it. And then I fall over. It's disgusting. What are we talking about? Nicole just walked in the room and she's like, what is going on?
All right. What show are you doing again?
This is Wood Talk, actually, surprisingly. Okay, I think we are on Shannon's question. Save
Jason,
us, Shannon.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry about what happened to that question. I'm going to apologize on behalf of Wood Talk.
Look,
what just
this is what makes our show different than any other show out there. We're willing to talk about fingers and butts.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
I mean, it's different. Is it a good different? Yeah, I don't know.
Definitely not. We'd have more listeners if we were better at this.
All right, moving on. This is from Andy. He says, I want to build my first workbench. And as the saying goes, the best wood to use is the one you have at hand. Is there a saying that says that? Should we have t-shirts made? Stickers.
Definitely.
Stickers that say that.
Stickers. Yes. Definitely stickers.
I got for free a whole bunch of hard maple baseball bat turning blanks from an old friend of mine that no longer wanted them. The dimensions on these are 12 quarter square by 42 inches, not long enough for the 72 inch workbench that I plan on making. My question is, would it be better to still run the boards in the traditional lengthwise direction of the bench, left to right, and stagger laminate them like you would do on floorboards? Or is it possible to run them from front to back?
Hmm.
For example, in grain facing the user and the like apron skirt style support under the long dimension for support. Could this method cause any unwanted side effects that you wouldn't normally see on a traditionally constructed bench? Dimensional instability, issues with face clamping and in grain. I will be using a leg vise. So I grabbed this question because it makes me go, I mean, he's talking about using an apron, like a skirt underneath it. Because my first thought would be, would you lose some of the stiffness? Like if you're doing a Rubo style where you had a span between the legs, would you lose some of that stiffness because you were essentially going across the grain? Even then, with 12 quarter boards laminated together, I think you would still be pretty stiff, but it would make me a little cautious just because you're building a workbench, it's going to get banged on or whatever. But if you're actually going to run an apron or skirt support underneath it, I see absolutely no problem with that. I don't really see there being an issue with like an ingrain face as your clamping face for a leg vise. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just going to be hard. And I actually have both the chop and the bench laminated with leather on mine. So I'm not really worried about you know, what's underneath the leather. The leather adds that little bit of cushion, if you will. Mm-hmm. I don't see an issue with this. I think that apron is important, though.
You don't think it might? I mean, I guess if the apron is really cinching this thing down, keeping it stable with that many joints as you go across the 72 inch length of this thing, that it wouldn't have more of a, you know, propensity to cup or something. You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like it might want to kind of fold in on itself over time.
I don't know, because I mean, you're already talking about 12 quart of material.
It's
here.
Pretty so thick stuff, right? I mean,
yeah, you're not going to get a lot of, you're certainly not going to get any movement, you know, across on each individual board, I should say. So, you know, as you glued the whole thing up into one long bench, I really don't think so, because I think any movement you would get would also be a little bit more flexible because mm-hmm. you've got multiple pieces, right? Almost like a roll top desk.
Yeah.
You've got a bunch of pieces together. I don't think you're going to get movement within each piece because it is really thick stuff. And I think in what you're talking about was my concern about that kind of stiffness. If you yeah. don't have any support underneath it, I don't even know that it needs to be like cinched down onto the apron, although that's probably not a bad idea. I mean, what I would do is if you were building an almost like a Nicholson style bench with a wide apron, or even if it's not a wide apron, I would probably run intermediary braces from front to back. Like if it's a 72 inch long bench, maybe, you know, you probably have a stretcher between the legs on either end, maybe run a brace right in the middle, or maybe two braces in between the legs that connect from apron to apron, just to give you a little bit of substructure.
Yeah.
But if it's well supported, I don't know that there would be an issue with that.
You know, even if the long-term stability is good, I think one area that might be problematic is going to be at the very beginning when you're putting this thing together. Because I found that when even gluing across the standard width with standard long boards, the more of those glue joints you have, the more of a tendency this thing is to be, you know, the final glue up to be fairly twisted, or just something is not going to be flat. And I think that's going to be exacerbated if you're doing a bunch of smaller pieces going all the way across the length like that. But right. but if we're saying it's stable, once he flattens it, it should all be good.
But well, and I'm thinking of this from a hand tool perspective, and it occurs to me if I'm building this from a power tool perspective, actually flattening that, like, you know, I mean, that's the whole reason like the split top came along, because you can use a typical bench top, bench top planer and run each side through. Well, you can't do that. Like, you can't run this board through across the grain. The planers don't like that very well, unless you like a fuzzy bench, in which case you're good.
Well, if you have a helical head and maybe you have a sacrificial piece at the end, you could probably get away with it. Take light passes. Don't take Cremona passes. Take light passes. You might be able to get away with it. Yeah, but it would, I mean, I don't think I don't know that I would want to test that out.
I mean, that is a lot of glue joints. So there is a potential for slippage. You really want to, you probably want to use, you know, a biscuit joiner or a domino or whatever, just to try to keep your stuff in line. So it's not slipping around on you during glue up. Certainly break that glue up into smaller kind of sub assemblies. So you're not trying to glue together 6, 8, 10 of those things all at once.
Interesting question though.
And think hard about surfacing it. Like if you're a hand tool freak like me, it's not a big deal because you're just going to work from front to back and surface it kind of in quadrants probably. But if you're thinking of running that through a tool like a planer, that could be an issue. Maybe not. Again, if you have a helical head, it should be okay. But
get your
have you guys ever run
out.
A board through completely cross grain in a planer? I haven't. I don't. I've done that.
It'll be okay. I mean, as long as the fibers are supported, it's fine.
It doesn't really make that much of a difference. It's not as bad as you think it would be.
Okay, good to know.
But the router sled thing is an option.
It's not totally clean like the other way, but it's not like all torn up and mangled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the end is probably going to be an issue. Whatever board is at the end is going to go
back there.
Yeah. So that's sacrificial, but everything else should be okay.
It's a rustic chamfer.
There you go.
Rustic.
I like
there
that.
There you go.
And he's going to tear out is going to be a rustic chamfer now.
This is why I listen to the show right here.
Good stuff.
We good?
We're good.
We're good. We're ready for you, Matt.
All right. This next one is from Ryan. He says, I'm staring at Greek. Sam, this is really hard again. You guys just. Why
staring
are you
at Greek?
I just need someone to read stuff for me.
I actually edited this question because there were a few errors in it. And I did that so that you would be able to read it better.
I might be able to read it after I get started. It takes me a little bit to kind of get going here.
All right, go ahead.
I'm staring at a great deal on kiln-dried hickory in the face. I want to use it to make two farm tables, but the weight is my first concern. At 1800 plus on the Jenga scale, I assume it'll be very heavy. Correct me if I'm wrong. My first thought is to get a shiny new blade and cut coves on the underside of the boards, say 90% of the length, and leave the end square. While this would definitely reduce the weight and dull a good blade, that would be difficult. That would be difficult. Oh, that would be difficult to butt stop. Butt stop.
Butt stop.
Butt stop.
That was Cremona's high school band's name.
I'm worried about seasonal expansion against traction. I feel like this would be. Feel this would cause an unfortunate amount of cupping on the tabletop, delamination, spilled beverages, etc. So I think this would be like a ridiculous waste of time.
How do you really feel about it, man?
That's really stupid.
So just for fun, I looked up the density of hickory on the wood database, and it is 50 pounds per cubic foot. And for comparison, I looked up white oak, which is what my farmhouse table is made of. That has 47 pounds per cubic foot. So I think the math was it's 6% heavier for hickory. So unless you're trying to compare this farmhouse table to like your Home Depot pine construction lumber farmhouse table for weight, I think you're going to be right in line with the weight of any solid wood, hardwood table. So I see no reason to do this.
So you're saying suck it up.
I get some muscles. I don't know. I have the white oak table. It's heavy. It's not going to go anywhere. So if you're really concerned about the weight, maybe hardwood is not the right solution. And maybe you really want to go down this route, but I don't know if like, I feel like that would cause all kinds of weird things to happen to the boards.
Yeah.
Removing that much material on one side like that.
Well, how often are you moving the table that it's an issue?
Okay. Hey, remember we talked about the thing where like things we hate
are
like annoys us? Mm-hmm. People who are so concerned with how much things weigh, like as if I'm moving these things every day, like constantly.
It gets moved once.
I have not moved the farmhouse table. I built it there. It has not moved.
And when you sell the house, it'll probably stay there.
Because it's so heavy. Maybe you move it more if you made it lighter.
Why would I move it?
Because maybe you guys want to have dinner on the lawn or something.
On the floor, we're like, just move all the water, sell the ground. Like
Matt builds all his projects to have built-in theft prevention.
Right. They're all just too heavy to move. Actually, I was just thinking about this on the executive desk that I'm trying to plan. And I'm looking at the structure and looking at a lot of 3/4-inch plywood and wondering to myself, is this heavier than it needs to be? Should I be doing, you know, maybe a different strategy here and jump down to 1/2-inch ply for the panels, making it lighter? So this has crossed my mind in that same way. Like, do I want to have to move something that heavy? But again, once it's moved, the fact that it's heavy in this, once it's in its position, is probably a good thing, you know, that I shouldn't be afraid of. But it is something that crosses your mind. Even sensible people think this.
You can kind of do the math and figure out exactly how much lighter it would be.
Yeah.
If you wanted to, but like in this case, like compared to any other table, it's basically the same weight.
Well, and I think if he's truly concerned about it, he could fake it with the thickness of the top. He could put, you know, maybe use 4/4 stock and then kind of trim it out in such a way with, you know, end grain on the ends and a long grain strips on the side. Just don't look too close. It'll be fine. But you'll get that appearance of like a thicker farmhouse top. That's actually doesn't, you know, it's just basically the trim that's giving it that appearance. So that might be something to consider that should be more stable than hollowing the thing out.
Yeah, he didn't say what the thickness was on that stuff he was staring in the face. But if it's anything like that, I would consider like doing it that way. If you're really concerned about weight, just go thinner and trim it out so it looks thicker if you're looking for a thicker top.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Okie doke. Last question here is from Scott. He says, since everyone always thinks you're thanks you for not quitting. And not that I want to see that happen, because I don't. Thought this was a really interesting question. What would I listen to then? I only settle for the best. What would you do if you actually did quit? And I first thought about this, and I'm like, well, nothing different. We just wouldn't do the show. But he has a more interesting, there's more depth to this. He says, not just the show, but all of your online work as well. Shannon has a day job already, but would you others have to resort to punching a clock again, or could you get enough commission work to stay afloat if you did quit, which I hope you don't? So that made it interesting, you know, just not doing Wood Talk is, you know, that would not really change much. But what if we just, whatever reason, we went away and said, no more YouTube, No more Instagram selfies with Matt's face in it. Like, what would we do? And actually, I think we could still extend this question to Shannon, because I know wanting to work at a lumber yard was obviously something as a woodworker that, you know, kind of influenced why he would even consider that in the first place.
Right. I would have said no to the corporate job if it were something else at that point.
So let's say something happens, maybe something happens at the job. Shannon, we'll go with you first. What might you pursue if the woodworking thing wasn't there and the lumber thing wasn't there?
You mean after American Idol?
Yes. I was going to say something having to do with music. American Idol is a good one.
Gosh, I don't know. I feel like I've gotten to this point in my life that I figured it out. I don't want to change now.
I don't want to.
I swapped around enough things prior to this. Right. I don't know. I would definitely move somewhere where it is a lot cheaper to live. And I would probably like end up becoming a fly fishing guide or something like that.
There you go. I like that. What about you, Matt?
It would have to be outdoors, whatever it was.
And also part of the question,
someplace cheap, because I'm not going to make a lot of money doing whatever it is.
Well, I was going to say part of his question I think is interesting too, is do you think you could survive on commission work?
I don't think I'd want to survive on commission work.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yep. I know too many people who do that and say, don't do it. I do it. You shouldn't.
Yeah. What about you, Matt?
I'm with Shannon on the commission work thing. Like, I don't do commission work now because I don't want to. And I don't see me ever wanting to do that kind of work. So I think I'd probably go back to getting a desk job, I guess.
Yeah.
I was pretty good at that. I mean, it's pretty similar to what I do now. I'm at the desk a lot.
Right.
a whole lot different.
What would the desk job be? Like, what field?
I don't know. I've only done one thing besides this, which was systems design and health information systems, which I was decent at. So I guess I could do that again. I was going to do that again before I decided to follow my heart and follow my dreams and do this instead.
The American dream, man. You did it.
Set it on your own. But yeah, at this point though, like having experienced self-employment, I don't think I could ever go back to working for someone else.
Yeah. I'm there with you. I think if I were to work for someone else, it would be for very strategic reasons, like to eventually take their job and then own the place.
Like what I do right now. In other words.
I would be not the best hire.
I'm coming for your job.
I don't think I could do that anymore. I mean, if I had to, bottom line is I've got a family to take care of and I would do what needs to be done, but I would probably do everything I possibly can. I mean, the thing is, when you work for yourself long enough, you start to see things a little bit differently. Before I worked on my own and I was just, you know, doing my science thing and collecting a paycheck, the thought of being on my own was terrifying. And the fact I really admired people who could do it, and I also didn't understand how they could do it. But now that I've done it for, you know, over a decade, it's a different way of thinking about things. And I see possibilities where in the past I would have seen obstacles. So I could probably see myself going into something else completely unrelated to woodworking and still doing my own thing, because I'm at this point where it's like between Nicole and I, we could come up with good ideas. We could make it happen and figure it out. So what that would be, I don't know exactly, but I could tell you, I probably would be very unlikely to go back into the science world. Logistically, I'm too far out of it and too, you know, not up on the current literature and research to even be able to have anything but the most entry level tech job to begin with. So I wouldn't be very good at it. But I just think, I don't know, once you get to that point, you know, you just figure out ways to make it happen. You know, it kind of like a bad example maybe, but you look at certain entrepreneurial types who fail, repeatedly fail, yet somehow they still manage to get enough investment income or investment, investors, let's say, to start that next venture and try the next thing. Just because you fail doesn't mean you shouldn't try again. You know, so I think you get into a little bit of that mindset where you'll figure it out. You'll figure something out. And honestly, I think if I would do anything else career-wise, I think I would want to cook something with food. I'll just do a podcast.
I'll come over. You can cook for me.
I'll make you pancakes and show you how
it's
done.
There's your business model right there. Cook for Matt.
There you go.
Cremona's personal chef. Let's hope that his job keeps going.
You know, as far as commission pieces, let's see. With the investment that I have in like a brand and social media presence and all that stuff. I think I could do okay making custom furniture, but not okay to survive as the sole breadwinner. So I think when Nicole had her regular job, and if I had to just kind of keep my end of the bargain up, I could probably pull that off with custom furniture. But I don't think now that Nicole works for the company, I don't think I could, you know, keep us going as a four-person family here just with custom furniture. So I would
Nicole's
have to make,
getting the shop.
Well, no, I would make her go back to work somewhere else, not with me. Man, that's an interesting thing to ponder. So thank you for that, Scott. That was a cool question.
What's interesting to ponder is how can you take the existing business model and just change the content?
Oh, very easy.
Because I think that's what a lot of these entrepreneurs are doing. You know, you see all these guys that have 20 different member sites or websites or whatever, and they're just, some of them are playing the keyword game, playing the SEO game.
Sure.
But, you know, we all have other interests. You know, could I build out, you know, an online, I've often told my wife that, you know, she needs to take her voice lessons online because she has only so much time and she's got this huge demand for students. And it's like, I wonder if there's something we could do online. I think it would be fascinating to try to kind of repurpose your interests as long as that doesn't kill your interests.
Well, I think online, totally. You know, if you take woodworking and sub in barbecue, you know, not that I'm that good at it. I'm definitely a better woodworker than I am barbecuer.
Yeah, but when you started, you weren't a very good woodworker. So.
That's true. Yeah. But now
it's all the personality, Mark. You should know that by now.
It is. Yeah. And I don't have a good
their one. Skill level isn't all that important. But if you're entertaining and I'm having fun, you know more than me, just a little bit.
Secret to my success, baby.
I'm there.
But I think I could substitute barbecue in for woodworking and do okay. I don't know how well it would do, you know, go. Would I want to do it again, you know, 10 years from now? Would I still want to do that? I don't know. But online stuff, yeah. But, you know, brick and mortar sort of like that type of a job that is not an online business, not quite as easy to sort of pop one topic in and sub another one in its place.
Yeah.
That'd be a little weird. Okay. Well, there you go. Interesting question to ponder. I think that's really about it for today's show. And Shannon, why don't you tell them how they can get in touch with us and where they can find us and all that stuff.
This has been a deep show. We love interesting questions to ponder. So please send us more interesting questions to ponder. If you are feeling technically advanced, use your voice memo app and record something and send it to us at woodtalkonline@gmail.com. Or just go to woodtalkshow.com/contact, and there's a form there you can fill out and that fun stuff. And why do I have an echo now?
I don't know. Something weird just happened with the audio.
That's
good funky. Thing we're at the end of the show.
Yeah, it's a good thing. So anyway, yeah, that's how you can reach us. Please reach us. Reach out and touch us.
Yeah, reach out. Touch Matt's butt. All right. See you later, everybody.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.